Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott, and with me this week, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet once again. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello, Stephen Scott of the RNIB.
Ah, yes, we're all getting our titles in here. That's nice. Okay, well, look, we've got lots to get through once again. This week, we're focusing yet again on TechShare Pro. I've got to say, TechShare Pro is an amazing event, and Robin and I got a chance to go. AbilityNet were organising the event, and RNIB sponsored the event, and Google hosted it. So it's been quite an event. And we've had a great time there. But we thought we'd focus in this week on one particular theme. Because I have to say, Robin, this theme came out time and time again throughout the course of the conference. And that was how we encourage, and I use that word in inverted commas, encourage businesses to make their websites and their apps more accessible to us as blind and partially sighted people. It seems to be, even today, Robin, even in 2019, still a challenge to get businesses on board with this.
Absolutely. So you mentioned a few of the people that were there, a few of the organizations. Microsoft were there, Apple were there, Amazon, etc. And all of these companies are brilliant examples of taking diversity and inclusive design, accessibility, importantly enough, giving it the priority that it deserves and that will help you make products fit for purpose in this really kind of diverse digital age in which we live. And, you know, if you're not disabled or, you know, we're talking about vision impairment here, but, you know, it's going to get us all in the end as you get older. So you've got, you know, an aging population, you've got a really diverse set of customers. It's really, really important that you take it seriously now. A lot of the delegates that were there at the conference were already won over, you know, hearts and minds. They wanted to get tips, tricks, information, best practice examples of how they can take the passion that they've already got back to their organizations and win the case within those organizations so that their companies can take it as important, you know, with as the same level of importance as the companies that were represented there. So yeah, the carrots and the sticks, how you can win people's hearts and kind of scare the life out of them to make sure that they do it. Just do it.
Yeah, exactly. Make web accessible, make apps accessible, all of that stuff. But it's interesting because we do pick up on some of those finer points this hour. We're going to be hearing a bit later from Malin Rigg from Norway, who talks about the experiences there and things that they have done. I've got to say, Robin, it's an incredible story about what happened in Norway. The decision essentially was, do you know what? We are going to take the stick approach to this and we're going to make people listen regarding accessibility, and it's working.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the details of this are brilliant. I'm really looking forward to us playing that one because it's how we should be doing it. You know, we've got the example. Let's just do it over here, guys.
And we're also going to be hearing from the States. Interestingly, of course, the most notable case this year has been Domino's Pizza. We've heard a lot about that. Yeah, I know.
It's channeling Sean.
Yeah, that's right, channeling our Sean Priest. But, you know, really, it has been a challenge this year to get a company like Domino's to realise, actually, this is something that you should be doing, not because it's a nice thing to do, but because it's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, it didn't seem as if Domino's were too keen on this, and they took their decision not to make their website accessible or fully accessible to the Supreme Court. Now, thankfully, it didn't go any further than that, and an earlier appeal was lost. So that was it, basically. Now they have to go away and fix that. But this is the challenge between the carrot and stick approach. Which one works best? Well, to get things started in the conversation in this field, and it's going to be a really interesting conversation, I hope, this week for all of us, because we're going to be getting a chance to sort of see behind the curtain here as to how businesses think and how governments and how organisations around the world are trying to make the web a more accessible place for all of us. We start with Robin and I sitting down with Ellie Southwood, the chair of RNIB. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
So you've just chaired one of the panels here. What was the panel called?
So the panel was all about carrots and sticks in the context, of course, of creating a more inclusive world through websites, apps and digital technologies that people with disabilities can access properly. So to what extent do we need to be working really closely with businesses and taking the carrot approach and working together collaboratively? And then is there a point where we need perhaps to make greater use of the stick, so the legal enforcement side of things? We heard from four really different panelists with different perspectives, which was great. So in the US, people will perhaps be familiar with the fact that often more legal action is taken in cases like that. And I think our conversation revealed that sometimes that isn't always as helpful as it could be. And actually, sometimes a bit more carrot would help. We also heard from Norway, where there is an organisation who inspect and enforce on specific websites. They've had a couple of quite high profile cases, one for an airline website where they imposed a fine of 15,000 euros per day before the organisation got its act together and made it accessible. So that's also towards the sort of stick end of things. But we also talked about the incoming European legislation, which is quite a wide application about accessible websites and so on. And obviously thinking in our current context in the UK about how we implement that, because it will be up to individual member states. Whatever happens with the B word, it will be up to individual member states to implement that. So, you know, it was a really fascinating discussion. Lots of really interesting themes around, you know, it's really important to work with businesses. It's something we do a lot at RNIB. So we're working with some of the airports at the moment on accessible kiosks. We've done loads of work in the past with the Googles and Amazons of the world. And in fact, the voice that you hear on your Amazon Echo was originally came out of an RNIB project and introduction. So, some of these things have a fabulous legacy.
It's interesting you have the title of this as Carrots and Sticks. It's not Carrots or Sticks. And why is that important?
I think the importance of having both that collaborative way of working, but also knowing when it's time to get legal, that feels really important. And what we heard, I think, from all the panellists was that actually both of those things matter. And there's a third thing that matters too, which is also consumers, customers, disabled people, whatever phrase you want to use, actually being skilled up and having the confidence to use digital technology. So I think there have been a couple of examples where companies have made improvements, but perhaps people don't know about them. So we need to get the word out there. Also, perhaps don't have the confidence to use them. So we need to make sure there's a third leg to that stool, I think, actually, which is something that came through really strongly in our discussion this morning.
I think also it's important to say, and Robin, I know this is a story we've talked about a lot, is the Domino's story. You, of course, have written about it, and we've talked about it plenty. Certainly the stick would be required there, I think, because you wouldn't be able to order your carrots otherwise, would you, if you put carrots on a pizza?
You couldn't customise your order, that's for sure.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the RNIB here in the UK have been almost unique in championing civil cases, claims against organisations. And while we're not as litigious as America is by any stretch of the imagination, you know, we have yet to see the stick being wielded with any impact, really. I mean, it's been nearly two decades of legislation, and we're still in the, I would argue, single digits. If George Rhodes's research is anything to go by, and certainly our own experience is that, you know, 90%+ of websites don't even meet single A, and the real life accessibility or usability for people with a range of disabilities is, you know, varies greatly, and it's a harsh climate out there for people with disabilities. So the Norway approach, you know, it was really interesting that SAS, their national airline, were given a year, and then as soon as the fine came into effect, they sorted it out in 10 days.
How strange.
So,
but does that not say that the stick is more important than the carrot then?
Well, absolutely both. But yeah, I mean, the business case for accessibility is overwhelming, particularly now that on a daily basis, over 50% of traffic to any given website is from mobile. And we all know sitting around this table that people who use mobile to access content are, in very real terms, disabled or temporarily impaired on a daily basis. We have exactly the same requirements if you're, you know, trying to access something on a bumpy bus or in a noisy train carriage or on a bright sunny day, or if you're trying to order an Uber after a really good night out. You need extreme usability. All of those things play to accessibility or inclusive design. So I would like to see strengthening of both carrots and sticks to really shift the needle. But looking at, you know, countries like Norway, Spain, Australia, strengthening that stick really does seem to have shifted the needle.
I mean, Ellie, from your point of view, looking at RNIB specifically, do you think that the RNIB needs to become more litigious in a way to try and combat some of these challenges? Do you think that's something that the future of RNIB should... It should be part of that?
I think we should always have it in our back pocket. I think...
Because the organisation doesn't do it much at the moment, does it?
Well, quite often we don't do it because we end up not having to. So that doesn't mean that we haven't... We haven't sent robust letters to various people which have, you know, made sure that there's a response before we get to the point of taking legal action. So I think it's important to note that often this is a sort of success factor in the fact that we've managed to hold off the need to take legal action. But I do think perhaps sometimes we're a bit squeamish in the UK about doing that. I think we need not to see it as a first resort ever, but to make sure that companies, public sector, they know that we do have that available to us and that our community is really happy for us to do that on their behalf. Because I think one of the other reflections from this morning is about the extent to which it's fair to ask individuals to be taking legal action, to take responsibility for this. And I do think organisations like RNIB have a huge part to play in, if you like, that sense of class action. So actually, I think it's a huge ask of individual people to invest their emotional energy and their time and practical, you know, in challenging things which are sometimes really difficult and sometimes can be quite unpleasant, you know, difficult experiences. So I think RNIB has a role to play there in helping to advocate on our behalf.
And it can be quite a dangerous exercise for an individual to take on board. Yeah. There was a relatively recent case in the UK. If the fees that people accrue in taking a private action exceed the award, if they're successful, then they have to pay the fees. And there was a lady who was awarded £33,000 in damages in a case of digital, you know, exclusion. But her fees were £33,000. So she was actually out of pocket at the end of the process. So, yeah, it's daunting, to say the least, for, you know, individuals to do that. Now, I've got a question about RNIB's position. Now with the public sector regulations, there's a named body, the EHRC, who are going to proactively monitor and compile reports on the sites that they have audited and that they are, you know, approaching to become compliant. Can the RNIB proactively put in freedom of information requests against that public body and publish the list of companies that aren't compliant? That would certainly help.
I think there is definitely an appetite within RNIB and a responsibility for us to start to be more proactive. We will always want to be led by what blind and partially sighted people tell us is important. So if we are working really collaboratively with an organisation who happen not to be compliant right now, we might hesitate before naming and shaming them in the interests of the sort of bigger prize. But certainly, and in principle, I don't think, you know, I think that's absolutely something we should be doing more of, especially now the information will be more readily available. I think that's the thing.
Absolutely. It's not a naming and shaming exercise, but it kind of is.
Which is, that's important, isn't it? But I guess the question is, looking at this much more widely, how big is the problem? I mean, when we talk about this, we talk about the potential solutions, carrots and sticks. But how big is the problem overall? I mean, when we talk about website accessibility, where do you think we are? I mean, you know, this is to both of you, I guess. But where are we with it?
I mean, are we at 70% accessibility? Are we at 10%? Where are we in this?
I mean, it's really interesting because Google, who are speaking here at the conference today and tomorrow, they're going to be talking about the accessibility checking application and tool that they have, which will make it much easier for both developers and users before they buy something from the Google Play Store to check how accessible or inclusive it is. And iOS, thankfully, you know, developers actually have to kind of break the accessibility by creating custom controls and not following the guidelines to make sure that they're accessible. So I think on mobile, in the app environment, things are improving, and I think iOS is still the go-to platform there. But web, you know, applications, there are no such things as websites anymore. They're all web applications and JavaScript and Ajax, etc. And yeah,
I think cleaning fluid. You know, that changed, has it?
Yeah, the toilets are clean, but the websites are bad. So I think it's a hostile environment still, and I'm sure that Ellie hears that feedback from R&IB customers, stakeholders on a daily basis.
I certainly do, and I think it's, you know, it is important about percentages and numbers, but it's also important to remember what that means in terms of somebody's day-to-day experience. That makes the difference between somebody being independently able to book their own holiday and not being able to. And I think for most of the general public, the thought of that suddenly being taken away from them would be entirely unacceptable. And, you know, we shouldn't be accepting it on behalf of blind and partially sighted people either. One of the things that I think today's really highlighted and probably contributes to this issue as well is this issue about just not enough disabled people in decision-making positions across these companies, in technical roles and in leadership roles too, who will, you know, ask the question around the table, who will be alert to potential issues. So I think it really all comes back to that as well.
That's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Yeah. And also it's a big question. Do you want more disabled people at the table, or do you want, I mean, we obviously want the mix of people. We don't want it just to be all disabled people. We don't want it to be just all able-bodied people. It has to be that mix, doesn't it? Because otherwise, how does anyone else learn anything? And I guess in some respects, it would be good if the leaders themselves were actually able-bodied people, but with this thought in their minds, with this understanding and realizing the value of us as blind people, as customers.
If we're serious about designing services that are usable by everybody in a society which is as diverse as you can imagine, then the organisations, the decision-making bodies should reflect that diversity. And I think that also means people who do not have lived experience of disability having accountability for how they are listening to us, you know, how they're hearing, what they are doing, to make sure that even if that voice isn't at the table, that it's definitely in the conversation.
I should also say, you know, on the TechShare Procast here, we're talking to business directly. So I guess from your perspective at R&IB, Ellie, mm-hmm. it's important to say that, you know, R&IB is open for business in this sense, to come to R&IB to offer support to businesses who might want to know how to make their websites more accessible or how to enable their shopping experiences to be better for disabled people.
The place to start with this is a conversation. So I think there are very few businesses out there where if you said, you know, digital inclusion, it will increase, you know, number of people who can buy stuff from you or interact with your website or app, there's very few businesses who'd say, oh no thanks, you're all right. However, I think where it gets difficult is people knowing what to do, and the thought of the legal risks. I think sometimes, you know, I wouldn't want that to be putting businesses off. So I think there is a conversation has to be the start. We're certainly there, ready to support. And also, you know, we have a large community of blind or partially sighted people we can reach out to help to test websites and apps, to help to advise, to give feedback. And that, I think, is a hugely valuable thing for any organisation, public or private sector.
For the benefit of balance here, AbilityNet also has this option available as well for businesses.
Absolutely, and there has been a history of the R&IB's web accessibility team and AbilityNet's consultancy team working together collaboratively on you know, ensuring that there is a full appreciation on the part of our clients to make sure that their products and services are fully inclusive. And I would say that's table stakes. I mean, we were talking a moment ago about, you know, the diversity in at sea level, at trustee level, at product team level, etc. And we've seen time and again where if a service or a product has been created in a bubble, I'm thinking of AntennaGate with the iPhone 4, where they never took it outside of the Californian kind of basin, and so they never realized that attenuation of signal was a thing until it went out into the wide world, and that really turned around and bit them. You know, in this age of extreme computing, where everyone's computing on the edge, regardless of whether they've got a disability with a capital D or an impairment, you know, we're all using technology in extreme environments. Accessibility and inclusive design should be table stakes. And that's where disabled people can really add value. And, you know, they should be represented at every level. And as far as an accessibility champion, it's not enough to have one. Obviously, you need to. But even at sea level, one person championing accessibility within an organization isn't enough. No. You need one within every department, within every team. And in fact, every team member needs to be invested as well and passionate about doing things in an inclusive way. And then, you know, us, we're all visually impaired around the table here, we'll have a much better experience on a daily basis online. It's still a really tough environment out there.
It is.
Ellie, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast.
Pleasure.
And sharing your thoughts.
Thanks, Ellie.
And many thanks to Ellie Southwoods, the chair of RNIB, for sitting down with us. Robin, really a good chance to get a handle on RNIB's perspective on this. And it's interesting, almost in a sense encouraging more of us to get in touch with the organisation and using it as a way to bring forward litigation, something we haven't really seen before, or at least very much of in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, the RNIB traditionally have been the only organisation that have been championing individuals and groups of individuals to have take legal action against organisations. But I mean, that hasn't, not super recently. So that's kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. And this new public sector legislation and the fact that, you know, the government are going to actually step up into the enforcement role, albeit just in public sector, you know, maybe will encourage the RNIB to be a bit more active again in this area. Of course, it needn't be the RNIB. It could be AbilityNet. It could be any organization, or it could be just individuals going straight to the EHRC, the Equality and Human Rights Commission, with issues that they have. So guys, if you've had issues with websites, with apps, I would probably encourage you to contact the EHRC, but I'm sure that Ellie would be happy to hear from you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Stick around, because we're going to be talking about how other countries are dealing with the issues of inaccessible websites. We're going to hear examples from Norway and the US. But first, on Tech Talk, we are telling you how you can donate to RNIB this Christmas.
To donate £5 to RNIB this Christmas, please text SANTA to 70456. Texts are charged at £5 plus one standard network rate charge. Your special gift will help more blind and partially sighted people get the support they need to live life to the full. Thank you. See Christmas differently with RNIB Connect Radio.
We're discussing inaccessible websites on Tech Talk this week, and there are various countries around the world that are doing their bit to try and make companies in their country think about accessibility. And I've got to say, Robin, the story from Norway is a tale to tell, a country that just really took this head on. We are so pleased that we were able to sit down and sit with Malin Rigg from Norway, who tells us all about the work that's going on in her country. And also we hear from Stuart Seaborn from the States, who talks about the challenges with companies like Domino's and why litigation might not be the best way forward in the States.
We have two of the experts from the Carrots and Sticks panel that we've just had. Guys, do you want to introduce yourself, Malin?
Yes. I'm Malin. I head the Norwegian Authority for the Universal Design of ICT.
I'm Stuart Seaborn. I'm the Director of Litigation for a nonprofit disability rights legal center called Disability Rights Advocates that's based in California. We have offices in New York. We're in the States.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, listeners to the Tech Show Procast will have heard me interview Marlin recently in the feed. Loads of good stuff that we could revisit there. But let's start with dominoes, shall we, Stuart? Or if you want to talk about, you know, the main takeaways of the panel session that has just ended, but by all means.
So dominoes, it's based in the circuit that, you know, this, the U.S. is divided into circuits. We're in the Ninth Circuit. It's based in the circuit where I practice. One kind of beautiful thing about the dominoes decision is that basically tells people in the U.S. You don't have to wait for the regulators to act or to set standards. You can still use, we still have a, what we talked about in the session, a private right of action, right to go into court. So anybody who's impacted by a civil rights violation for people with disabilities under our disability laws can actually challenge that directly in court. And if they prevail, they can get their fees and costs covered. And that's really been the kind of impetus for advocacy for the last 30 years. One thing I was intrigued by with the panel is that we were starting to see a little bit of a backlash against the litigation approach. There are some folks that are suing lots and lots of companies and not necessarily sticking around to see the accessibility solutions put in and just demanding payment up front. And that's caused the business community and even some of the regulators to think about curtailing some of these rights. Hasn't happened yet. But one of the things I was intrigued by was other approaches, given that our stick that we've been using for 30 years may be possibly reduced at some point, what else works? And I was particularly intrigued by Malin's discussion of what's happening in Norway, where the regulators themselves, not only do they have the power for enforcement, but they do inspections. And that's something that I certainly think would translate well, whether it's just, you know, doing inspections of large companies or large covered entities. I think that would go a long way if the results were published. So that was something I was pleased with. Still on the stick side, the other thing that I was intrigued by in terms of what's happening with Access Israel is that they've had kind of a balanced approach. They've really taken a kind of publicity approach to who's doing accessibility well and who's not. And I think I'd like to go back and talk to our clients, particularly our organizational clients, about how they can, you know, make the best use of not only the public shaming, but also the public praise, because I think that'll go a long way. So I appreciated hearing that as well. For folks in Europe, I actually really do think you need both the carrot and the stick, and including folks in the UK. So I'm hoping that some teeth get put into the legislation, and I'm going to be tracking it as it unfolds. We are impressed with the kind of the web access standards. I wish our regulators would put standards in place, but after the dominoes decision, I don't feel as urgent about it, at least until the next case comes around. But I'm intrigued all around. I think that we are reaching a point where we need to consider carrots in the States, and we're here to learn.
You know, guys, Stephen Scott here, and I'm intrigued by what happened in the States, because it does seem, I mean, the States always feels to me very much a litigious culture, essentially, that you know, you take the company to court, you know, I'll see you in court, you know, all this. It feels very, you know, that's the way it goes. However, it's interesting, I'm intrigued to know what you think is the best approach. Is it the case of you need both, or is it the case that one actually does slightly outweigh the other in the sense of the stick? Because otherwise, what would have happened with dominoes? What would have happened here in the UK with other things? We're not as litigious here in the UK. What do you think is the best course of action? Does one outweigh the other?
I don't know if one outweighs the other. The one thing I'll say with a company like dominoes is it would not have done something but for action in the courts. And there still are in the U.S. We hear about it every day. You know, our constituent groups and client groups are constantly informing us of folks in terms of companies and even government entities that have the resources to make accessibility improvements. They just need to educate themselves and be willing to do so. So I feel like the stick is necessary. We've had to litigate several of these issues. We're trying other approaches, as I mentioned, the structured negotiations, which is essentially keeping it out of court. But I feel like you need the stick in addition to the carrots. I would love to see incentives for both companies and government entities kind of built into some of the regulations so that, you know, we're working with, you know, there's some kind of positivity that results when companies take action. I'm also anxious to see statistics when they evolve in terms of the market power of the disability community. I feel like the more that's out there and public, the better it will be to make that kind of carrot approach. I love the fact that they did it in Israel kind of without statistics first, and it worked. So I feel like that's something we can learn from. But I would like to see the development and furtherance of kind of studying how you can demonstrate the market share and market power. Because you know the disability community is both with its buying power and its size probably much larger than a lot of these folks think when they're doing their designs.
So Marlin, whenever I think about Norway and Scandinavian countries in general, you know, they're so civilized, they're so forward-looking and kind of embracing diversity. How important have the both the carrots and the sticks been recently? Now the kind of enforcement angle is relatively new, isn't it? So how have companies embraced the business case for digital inclusion? I was so surprised when the statistic you gave me of 51% as the base level when you started your, I mean, that blows completely out of the water what we have here in the UK with regards to level of compliance. So, you know, it sounds like the carrots were quite juicy, quite tempting for companies over there already.
Well, I think what is important to note, or my takeaway from today, is that I fully agree with Stuart. I think some kind of stick is absolutely necessary. We tried only carrots for a long time in Norway up until 2008, and then saw the need for actually doing something to enforce it because it wasn't moving along fast enough, in our opinion. I think that the 51% or the take for, or the feedback from the businesses is very different. Some businesses embrace this and see, you know, the business potential, and also the it's profitable with an aging society and with, you know, big user groups being left out. It's of course also a big customer group that you can tap into, whilst other businesses have been very restrictive or very opposed, I would say. So I think if you talk to different businesses, you will get very different answers. So it's not like everything is moving along smoothly.
Can I just ask, opposed to what? What is it that businesses are opposed to?
Well, I think in our experience, the first reaction when we make them aware this is a regulation is often that accessibility is very difficult, it's very expensive, and it's not really, they don't have that kind of users, typically.
Blind people don't come here, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a
municipality leader once saying that there are no blind people in our... So,
which is crazy when you
yes.
think about it, isn't it?
So we have put a lot of emphasis on just like conveying the message, this is not for blind people alone, this is for everybody, and that everybody in some time course of their lives are going to meet some kind of barriers, and this is what we as a society now expect you to do. If you're going to provide a service, you have to like adhere to some minimum requirements that we as a society actually expect you to do. But then you have to move quite fast over to, and this is also business-wise for you to do, and this is how you can do it, and this is one of our maybe experiences that it's the first pushback that is very hard and very expensive is often overcome if you explain exactly what do you need to do. Well, you have to turn up your contrast, and you have to text your videos, and you have to, and a lot of aha moments have followed from this, that okay, it might not be so difficult or might not be so expensive, especially if you plan it for your next release, for instance, or that you can get practical solutions. So if you can get to that part of the dialogue as soon as possible and not get stuck in the should we do it or should we not do it, you should do it, and this is how you can do it, and it might not be as difficult as you might have thought in the first place.
And I think the ownership of enforcement by the Norwegian government is just such a key element to pushing the agenda forward, because prior to that, you know, there might have been civil cases, as there have been in the States and here in the UK, but it wasn't high profile enough. It wasn't public enough. I mean, I'm not sure about the States, but certainly here in the UK, many, many cases were completely under the radar because part of the out-of-court settlement was an NDA, because nobody wanted to be in the public eye. I mean, obviously, Domino's are a notable exception over there. But yeah, so it didn't push the agenda forward at all. So for a government body to own it, to make it a public-facing exercise, which I'm really hoping is the case with the EHRC and the public sector regulations over here, adds that incentive, because then it turns the conversation from, well, why should we do it, or do we really have to do it, to, you know, the needle tips over into the right side, which is, okay, we have to do it. And however grudgingly they begin that journey, they then get all the benefits. They then can start having meetings about, okay, we're having to do this, so now let's see if we can actually do it in a way that will really help the brand. And then they start to vie with each other, like we have in certain sectors here in the UK, particularly in retail banking, where they're all vying with each other to be the best in the digital inclusion space. Is there a similar process underway in the States, for example?
Not that necessarily that I'm aware of. The one of the things I loved about the Norwegian model is not only that it's this kind of public warning, but that the regulators were willing to do daily fines.
Yep.
And that's something in the States we see in lots of different areas. And as I mentioned, that, you know, our Justice Department and the state regulators do have enforcement power. Sometimes they do enforcement. But this is the kind of thing, you know, in the U.S. we see in the context of large antitrust violations, or, you know, something that is, you know, traditionally, you know, big companies are going to take notice of. And the fact that the Norwegian government was doing it both publicly, but also willing to kind of, you know, document for others, everybody's watching, that these fines are happening, is amazing to me. And I feel like that's, you know, that's one of the takeaways I want to, you know, when we write and our constituents write regulators, that's, you know, something to take note of. I wanted to go back to the point about NDAs and public disclosures. One of the things that our clients have told us as we've kind of litigated using the stick over the years is that it's not enough to get a settlement just for a particular group or for an individual. And they have actually required, and now we make it a policy in practice, that the settlement, particularly the accessibility solution, what the problem was and what was done, be made public as a part of the settlement agreements. One of the things we've seen that surprised us is that a lot of companies, if you don't, you know, if the settlement is worded in a positive, you know, kind of forward-looking way, are willing to make the settlements public. And that, we think, is hopefully decreasing the need for litigation. We've seen it in a variety of not necessarily access to technology settings, although we have there too, but in the physical accessibility world, that kind of, like, you know, public settlement with both the company and the advocates going out hand in hand has made the next go around much easier for the next company. And so I feel like that's something that as advocates in other locations are considering what to do in terms of the enforcement power, having the ability to make things public is key.
If it becomes, if it goes under NDA, then of course that means that then the success, in a sense, goes away with it, and it makes it harder to showcase that in the future. It's interesting. But I also think one of the themes that's coming out of Textshare Pro already is value of disabled people, the value of us. And I find it interesting because, of course, you're from the States, dare I mention the T word, but Trump, you know, is not being exactly, let's say, an advocate for, well, anybody, frankly, but certainly disabled people. That's not uncommon, though. I mean, that's not unusual. I mean, you can tell me, but I don't get the impression that disability features very highly on anyone's radar in the States. Perhaps, obviously, for charities, or obviously for organizations who advocate for disabled people. But in the general context, what do you think?
So it has it's had its ups and downs. There have been certain regimes that have done more advocacy, more kind of public focus than others. I think, you know, what we're seeing, in addition to the fact that the regulators aren't acting now, one of the things that community groups have had to do is do things themselves and kind of get things in the public eye themselves. The thing that is most kind of concerning to me about that approach is when, you know, when companies don't have people with disabilities that are employed there and employed, as we talked about in the session, in decision-making capacities, I do worry that it looks like a much kind of smaller voice than it actually is. And so one of the things that, you know, we've noticed when there is active inclusion, the voice is, you know, is heard, and then, you know, then it grows. And I feel like even with, you know, whatever administration is out there, you know, you could use that kind of that outreach and active inclusion piece to spread the word about the kind of the voice of the disability community. But I think you're right. It's we in the States, we often refer to it as the last frontier of civil rights, and the pace is much slower than we'd like. You know, we're still doing, you know, unfortunately, we're still doing some of the same kinds of cases that our organization DRA was doing 25 years ago. And that, you know, particularly with things like access to education and employment, in addition to technology, we shouldn't be there. And so the fact that the voices aren't being heard is a problem. And we're going to try and continue to brainstorm about the solutions. But I think the inclusion piece, you can't have one without the other. You need folks included at higher levels, and companies being willing to treat inclusion as more than just a box to check.
I do so. This is a topic that really engages me, because in Norway, one of the holes in our legislation is the one area which are exempt from regulation is the digital solutions used in the workplace, which is one I'm pushing for to be included, because I think we are now moving, if we're going to move accessibility into more mainstream, not like just the right to be included and the right to make use of services, we are also as a society robbing ourselves for the potential that, you know, people with disability have to bring to the table. It's not like we are going to make services accessible for some groups. We need them on board on what we are going to do, and we need them in the workforce, and we need them in the education system. So to include digital solutions in the workplace is something I am really pushing for, and also to just like make people aware that this is not something we just want to do for some people. We need these people. We need the potential that everybody has to bring into the workplace and the workforce. It's, why should we as a society rob ourselves for, like, I don't know, 17% of the population is uninteresting to, you know, it's
nothing to offer.
It doesn't make any sense.
But I think it's interesting because you said something earlier that really struck me in the way that we communicate about this topic to businesses, to other organizations. And I think it's interesting you said, you know, it's not just for blind people, or it's not just for deaf people, or it's not just for, it's for everybody, essentially. Is that perhaps the key that unlocks this? That business, because this is the challenge, isn't it? Getting businesses to understand, getting people to understand. You're having the same conversation over and over again because it's not a national conversation. It's not appearing on television. People aren't talking about it all the time. Is it perhaps important, therefore, that we try and make it about everyone?
Mm.
Because that then becomes relative to people, more relative than talking about that group of people over there in the corner who happen to be blind or deaf or whatever disability they may have. Is that maybe the challenge?
Well, I think at least we need to bring that perspective in, because I think a lot of accessibility or the accessibility community, it comes out from, you know, from people that have this really urgent need to things have to work better. But to make it really interesting for businesses and just get them on board, you also have to have that broader perspective included, I think, that it's not only about making, you know, this necessary changes for some, but you will at the same time make it good for everybody.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so that has to be included, because I am sometimes afraid that if we focus too much on the rights of people that need this, you might lose somebody in the discussion that would be more interested if you could also talk about the potential and the benefits of including it to everybody. So I think we should try to balance those two in the dialogue and the discussion.
I mean, there's a general recognition that diversity is a really good thing within organizations, within society. You know, gender, LGBTQ, etc. are very, you know, hot topics these days. And to leave disability out of the equation, one would hope that in 2019, nearly 2020, you know, people would not see them as this other separate, you know, outside the kind of diversity revolution that we're seeing. And to hear you say that, you know, in such a forward-looking country as Norway, that has this brilliant legislation for externally facing digital products and services, that you don't have that in the workplace, I'm really surprised about that. I mean, here in the UK, under the Disability Discrimination Act, as it was since the late 90s, it was required both inside organisations and for, you know, customer-facing products, but there wasn't a requirement for proactively addressing those issues. And there would be this horrible catch-22, which is that an employer could quite rightly, quite easily say, I'm sorry, we can't employ a blind person or someone who needs to use Dragon or whatever it might be, because our systems don't work with it. And they literally needed to do nothing about it because there wasn't the proactive element. And then 2010, with the Equality Act, that proactive requirement came in. So now they could no longer use that excuse. And so you almost in Norway need to not only have the legislation that covers it, but also the requirement that says, okay, it's not, you know, whatever your systems are today, however exclusive they are, however inaccessible, you need to sort them out really quickly, because, you know, otherwise you're not going to be able to offer jobs to the right people, to the best person for the job in every case.
Yeah, well, I think that's a totally fair point, because this is my concern as well. Of course, we have Anti-Discrimination Act in place, but it's not, like you say, the proactive part, that you actually, it's not just that you shouldn't discriminate within the boundaries that you have, but that you also have to do something proactive, which is what I really would like to see as the next step for the Norwegian legislation.
So one of the things we have in the States, particularly with employment, is a reasonable accommodation requirement that, unlike other discrimination laws, it doesn't require people to be treated equally. It actually places an affirmative obligation on the employer to provide something beyond what the person without the disability has, in order to put the folks with disabilities on a level playing field. That often gets forgotten, in the work that we do, where employers who, you know, for lack of a better word, appear to be well-meaning, but they don't realize that there's an additional step to take for that inclusion, and they don't build it in at the onset. And then we realize that, you know, if they were to build in systems like systems compatible with Dragon or screen readers or whatever, it wouldn't keep getting brought up. Like, this is something that would go on, you know, as people age, a variety of reasons why it would make a large difference for inclusion, irrespective of this one case or, you know, one person that happens to need a screen reader. And so we see that on the employment end quite a bit. We also see a lot of lack of education in terms of policies where the employers say they can't accommodate, but they don't keep up education-wise with the technology. The statute we have is supposed to keep up, you know, it's built to be flexible, so that the reasonableness requirement gets modified. Things are more reasonable as technology improves. But that's something, there's a huge education component for employers, because they've been doing things a certain way and haven't bought, you know, in some cases, you know, their product may involve, the most up-to-date technology, but how they treat their employees and the infrastructure they have has not.
Absolutely.
And of course, the irony in all of this is a lack of vision as well, a lack of vision in the abilities of disabled people. I mean, the technology is already there. That's the amazing thing. I mean, you can go onto any computer, you can turn on a screen reader now on any Windows PC or any Mac or any Chromebook. You can use the accessibility that's built in. Anyone can access that. So it's a case of managers, it's a case of directors, CEOs, taking some time just to realize how, even not to understand how to use Narrator on Windows and, you know, get genned up on it, but just to understand how a blind person, for example, like Robin and I, would use technology. How do we do what we do? Because that lack of understanding is what holds us back in a lot of ways, isn't it, Robin?
Yeah, and I would hesitate to mention the A word, Apple, in Google's headquarters here in London. But arguably...
As we sit here with MacBooks, yeah.
Well, arguably, we have seen a revolution in built-in accessibility, in digital inclusion, in mainstream products. You mentioned Narrator there. And, you know, we really have seen a rising tide of accessibility and inclusion that has arguably been driven by Apple. And bringing it back to legislation and regulations, I would argue, and I think it's quite a valid argument, a lot of people have voiced this, that Apple led that because of Section 508 in the States, which stipulated that if any tech provider wants to sell their goods, their services to the government, both, you know, national and federal, across the states, then they need to be accessible. And that, at that point, Apple started to include built-in accessibility in their products, and we've seen a massive shift in how inclusive products are over the last sort of 10 or 15 years as a result. So, yeah, I mean,
so that says that the stick is more important than that outweighs.
Certainly.
On the scale, it tips it slightly, doesn't it?
When it came to saying, look, if you don't have accessible products, then you won't win this massive, massive, massive tender to sell, you know, MacBooks or iPads or whatever to 10,000 schools across the US, it really does have teeth. I would just like to see it being implemented and enforced on a company by company level when it comes to their digital properties, their websites, their apps. And hopefully the discussions that we've had today and some of the insights that we've gained will mean that a lot more people have an appreciation of how we need both carrots and sticks to push the agenda forward.
Okay,
so just want to say one thing about Section 508. We see that as both a carrot and a stick because it does provide incentives for, you know, companies want that massive amount of government business, whether it's the federal government or the states, like the state of California incorporates 508. So it could be an incentive as well. The other thing that we've seen is some of the state courts have opened themselves up. There was just a case one of our colleagues, Tim Elder, and some others brought that challenged a contractor who had applied to work for the state but hadn't complied with Section 508, and even though in the contract they said they would, you know, comply with all applicable laws and regulations, well, they didn't. And so there's actually room to challenge the contract. You used to be able to challenge just the government entity, and then they'd have to go after the vendor. Now you can do both. And so I'm hoping that, you know, with 508, there's going to be a kind of combined carrot and stick. And we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Guys, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks, babe.
Thank you to Malin and also to Stuart for giving us their time at TechShare Pro. You know, I've got to say, Robin, the Norway study just stands out for me so much. And it's interesting to hear Stuart talk about the States as well. I know I did bring up the dreaded T word, Trump. But you know, actually, I bring that up, and I did bring it up because it was so important. Because, like we said, disability is not high on the agenda in the States. And indeed, I think in some countries around the world as well, including the UK, it's not something that's talked about in this sense. It's either we're pitied as being blind people or disabled people, or, you know, we're all benefit scroungers. We don't get into the actual weeds on the serious topics, like, for example, how the world could be more accessible to us and how that could become a reality. And, you know, that feeds into the whole issue around value. We talked about that on the previous TechShare Pro episode. You know, it just seems to me there's a lot of issues which were obviously being discussed in that room by some very big companies, and that is brilliant. Even those companies, and we heard this actually from Google last week, you know, even they are just a team within a much bigger company. The fight goes on, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, interestingly, with the Domino's case, they argued that, you know, let's just limit it to bricks and mortar, to our shops, you know, to where you can come and get your pizza and eat in or take it away. I don't know what Domino's do. But, you know, they kind of grasped the idea that physical premises need to be accessible. And you're right, a lot of people, when they think accessibility,
they're thinking wheelchairs and stuff like that.
Yes.
And the real world. But the irony here is that the digital world is so much easier to make accessible, and yet that's the one that they're fighting against. It's like their imagination hasn't stretched to the idea that accessibility is a thing that you need to kind of even consider in the digital world. So that's really it's an eye opener for so many people, and the amount of brand damage that they must have undergone here, the optics as they call it over there, couldn't have been worse, really. So that was really bad. Now, for all the TT listeners out there who are wondering, well, how does this relate to me? I think it's really important, and tell me what you think, Stephen, that you guys appreciate the business case, that the carrots and the fact that there are sticks out there, it's a legal requirement, etc., and some of the nuances of both, because we want you to be active in this space. We want you to be emailing Domino's or whoever the equivalent are that are causing you grief online or on your mobile phone. And when you email them, you are now going to be equipped with a lot more information about how you can say, look, it's a legal requirement. It also makes really good business sense for the reasons that we've heard or been discussing today. So I think it's really important that you guys now have hopefully a really good appreciation of both sides of the argument, so that you can really lay it on the line.
Yeah.
When you're contacting different organizations and hopefully shaking things up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, this is guaranteed to be a bit of a different show for TT this week. But I think it's still important, because we hear so often from our listeners who will say to us, look, this website isn't great, this app isn't great, what's being done? And I think these are important questions to ask, but I also think it's therefore important for us to understand what actually is going on, what attempts are being made. Because if we don't know that, then we will just assume nothing is being done. The reality is there are lots of things going on, whether it be here in the UK with RNIB, or whether it be in Norway, or whether it be in the States, the work that is going on there, more legal-based work, I guess. But ultimately, there is a huge amount going on. It's so important that we were aware of that, so we know the facts, and it can obviously inform our view on these things. Really interesting episode, Robin. Thank you so much for being with me once again. We will, of course, have another Tech Talk for you coming soon at the usual time next week. And, until then, thank you so much. Just a quick reminder, email if you want to get in touch, share your thoughts on anything you've heard here, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Robin from AbilityNet, thank you again.
Stephen, thank you.